Welcome to Base by Base. You know, we often think about SARS and COVID-19, the huge impact they had, but have you ever really dug into where SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2 actually came from?
It's a massive question, isn't it? How did these viruses, which we know have relatives in bats, make that jump into humans and cause such widespread pandemics?
Exactly. And today we're going to get into the details of a really important study that tries to answer some of that.
That's right. We're focusing on a paper from the journal Cell, published in 2025. The lead author is Jonathan E. Picar, working with his colleagues.
And they set out to do some serious genetic detective work, looking at the bat viruses that were the ancestors of SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2.
Mm-hmm. They wanted to figure out a few key things. How recently were those direct ancestors actually circulating in bats? Where geographically were they likely located? And maybe most intriguingly, how fast did they move from those bat areas to the places where humans first got infected?
That speed question sounds crucial.
It really is.
Yeah.
And the challenge, you know, with coronaviruses is that they're notorious for recombination. They swap bits of their genetic code all the time.
Like shuffling a deck of cards, almost.
Kind of, yeah. So just looking at overall similarity between viruses can sometimes be misleading. The study is important because it uses methods that are specifically designed to account for that recombination.
Okay, so recombination-aware methods, trying to get a clear signal through the noise.
Precisely. To avoid the pitfalls of just comparing whole genomes without considering that shuffling.
So if you've been wondering about the deep roots of these pandemic viruses, or maybe how scientists actually use genetic data to track outbreaks back through time and even across geography, well, this analysis is definitely for you. Let's unpack what Picar and his sarbecoviruses, that's the group these SARS viruses belong to.
Exactly. And most of these sequences came from horseshoe bats, which we know are major reservoirs. But they also included, of course, the human SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2 sequences, plus some found in pangolins.
Okay, 250 genomes, that sounds like a lot to work with. What's the first hurdle when you've got all that recombination happening?
You need to pinpoint the parts of the genome that haven't been recently shuffled around. That's the recombination analysis step. They used a computational tool, it's called GAN, IDEA, to identify what they termed non-recombinant regions, NRRs.
NRRs, okay.
Yeah. Think of the whole virus genome like a long book. Recombination is like someone tearing out chapters from different copies and mixing them up. These NRRs were like the chapters or sections of chapters that haven't been recently swapped. Their evolutionary story within that segment is more direct.
So they're like little windows into a less scrambled past.
That's a good way to put it. They did this separately for the viruses related to SARS-CoV-1 and those related to SARS-CoV-2. They found quite a few, 31 NRRs for the SARS-1 group, 44 for the SARS-2 group, all of different lengths.
And once they have these cleaner segments, what do they do with them?
Then they bring in the molecular clock. For each NRR, they use molecular clock analysis. This basically uses the rate at which mutations naturally build up in the genetic code over time as, a clock.
To estimate dates.
Exactly. To estimate the time to the most recent common ancestor, the TMRCA. This tells them, for that specific NRR, how long ago did the human virus and its closest known bat relative share a common ancestor?
Makes sense.
Now, a tricky bit is that just looking at bat viruses doesn't always give you enough signal for very recent dates. So they calibrated these clocks using the known evolutionary rates that we've observed within the human virus outbreaks themselves, where the timing is much clearer.
Okay, using the human virus speed to set the clock for the bat virus history. But you mentioned these viruses have been around a long time. Does that clock work the same way looking way, way back?
Good question. No, not perfectly. Over really long time scales, thousands of years, mutations can kind of pile up and overwrite each other. It's called substitution saturation.
Ah, so it might look like fewer changes happened than actually did.
Exactly. Standard clocks can underestimate really old dates because of that. So for looking at the deeper history, specifically for splits they thought were older than about 50 years, they applied a different model. It's called the Prisoner of War model, or POW.
Prisoner of War. Sounds dramatic.
It does. But it's designed to correct for that saturation effect and give a more accurate picture of those ancient divergences.
Okay, so they've got dates for these segments. How do they figure out where the ancestors were hanging out?
That's phylogeography. They basically integrate the evolutionary trees, the timelines they built with geographic location data for where the viruses were found.
Mapping the family tree onto an actual map.
Pretty much. For the deep history, they modeled how these virus groups might have spread across Asia over long periods. But for the really key question, where were the ancestors just before they jumped to humans, they did a separate, more focused analysis looking only at the last 50 years.
And focusing just on the bat locations initially?
Right. To understand the natural movement in bats, they first excluded the human and pangolin locations from that recent geographic modeling.
Now, this all sounds complex. Did they, like, check their work, make sure the results weren't just some fluke of the data they happen to have?
Oh, absolutely. You have to in this kind of research. They ran several important sensitivity analyses.
Like what?
Well, one really interesting one was simulating the presence of hypothetical unsampled viruses. They basically added ghost viruses into their data set, placing them in locations closer to Guangzhou or Wuhan, the emergent sites.
To see if finding a close relative nearby would change the whole story.
Exactly. To check if their conclusions about the ancestral locations being far away and the speed of movement would hold up even if there were undiscovered closer relatives lurking nearby. It helps build confidence that the results aren't just an artifact of sampling bias.
Okay, that makes sense. Testing the what-ifs. So they've got the data, the tools for recombination, dating, mapping, checking. What did they actually find? What were the big reveals about the when and the where?
This is where it gets really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
When they looked at those TMRCA dates for all the individual NRRs, the results were pretty striking. Well, the average time across all segments pointed back a bit earlier, maybe mid-90s for SARS-1 relatives, year 2000 for SARS-2.
Okay.
Several specific NRRs showed much, much more recent connections between the human viruses and their closest bat relatives.
Surprisingly recent.
How recent are we talking? Like years? Decades.
For SARS-CoV-1, one specific NRR pointed to a closest inferred bat ancestor dating back to only 2001.
2001, but SARS emerged in late 2002. Exactly. Just 1 year before the human outbreak for that particular piece of the genome. And interestingly, viruses very closely related in that specific segment were later found in bats in Yunnan province in 2013.
Wow. That's cutting it close. What about SARS-CoV-2, the COVID-19 virus?
For SARS-CoV-2, they found two NRRs where the most recent common ancestor with a bat virus dated to 2014.
2014. So just 5 years before it emerged in late 2019.
Just 5 years, yeah. And these segments linked to viruses that were eventually found in bats in Thailand in 2020 and Yunnan in 2021. Another NRR pointed to a 2013 ancestor related to viruses found later in Laos in 2020.
So again, really recent ancestry for key parts of the virus genome, just a handful of years before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. It suggests the immediate precursors weren't ancient relics. They were circulating not long before spillover.
And it seems like finding more bat viruses over time keeps pushing these dates closer and closer.
Absolutely. They actually showed this. They tried reconstructing what the overall ancestor might have looked like. The recombinant common ancestor, basically piecing together the most likely ancestral sequence across all those NRRs.
A composite sketch.
Yeah, exactly. And they showed that as more bat genomes were discovered and added to the analysis over time, this reconstructed ancestor became progressively more similar to the actual human SARS viruses. By late 2022, it was over 98% identical.
Which really highlights why finding more of these viruses in bats is so important, right?
Definitely. It shows the value of continued surveillance. We're literally finding the missing pieces.
Okay, so recent genetic links. But where did the phylogeographic models place these recent bat ancestors?
The analysis focused on the last 50 years pointed pretty clearly. For SARS-CoV-1's recent ancestors, the highest probability location was in Western China, specifically Yunnan, Sichuan, or Guizhou provinces.
Okay, Western China for SARS-1 and SARS-2.
For SARS-CoV-2, the analysis pointed strongly to Yunnan province in China, or just across the border in northern Laos.
Yunnan and northern Laos, areas known for lots of bats and caves.
Exactly. Regions with extensive karst cave systems, high biodiversity, lots of horseshoe bats, prime sarbecovirus territory.
But wait, where did the human outbreak start? SARS-1 was Guangzhou, right? And SARS-2 was Wuhan.
Correct. Guangzhou in southern China, Wuhan in central China.
And how far are those cities from western China or northern Laos?
That's the key point. They're a long way away, more than 1,000 kilometers, over 1,200 kilometers in some cases.
Wow. Okay, so recent ancestors, genetically speaking, but geographically distant. Very distant.
Yeah.
How fast do these viruses normally spread through bat populations? Did they estimate that?
They did. They estimated the natural diffusion rate, how quickly the viruses spread across the landscape within bat populations. And they found the rates for both the SARS-1 and SARS-2 related viruses were roughly similar, somewhere between 740 and 1666 square kilometers per year.
Okay, and how does that compare to how fast the bats themselves move?
It's actually pretty close to the estimated dispersal rate for horseshoe bats, which is thought to be around 2,000 square kilometers per year.
So the takeaway there is that the virus generally travels at about the same speed as its bat hosts move around.
That seems to be the case, yeah. Which makes intuitive sense. The virus goes where the bats go, at roughly bat speed.
But that speed, 700 to maybe 2,000 square kilometers a year? That sounds pretty slow if you need to cross over 1,000 kilometers, right? That would take decades.
It would take a very long time, yes.
Yeah.
Which leads to the next really critical finding. What about the specific lineages that led directly to the human viruses?
Did they move at that same slow bat speed?
Well, this is where it got really interesting. Their analysis showed that the very tips of the evolutionary tree, the short branches leading right up to SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2, showed significantly higher dispersal velocities, much faster movement.
How much faster?
They consistently ranked among the very fastest dispersal events calculated across their entire data set of bat virus lineages.
Whoa. Okay, so most bat virus lineages are moving relatively slowly across the landscape, tracking their hosts. But the specific lineages that caused the human pandemics seem to have made an unusually rapid jump just before emergence.
That's exactly what the phylogeographic reconstruction suggests.
Yeah.
A burst of speed right at the end.
And the sensitivity analysis, the ghost viruses, confirmed this wasn't just because we haven't found viruses closer yet.
Correct. Even when they simulated having closer, unsampled viruses, the signal of rapid movement for those specific tip lineages leading to humans remained strong. It wasn't just an artifact of missing data near Wuhan or Guangzhou.
Okay, let's try and pull all this together now. It's quite a picture. We have evidence the closest bat ancestors were circulating recently, maybe only 1 to 6 years before the outbreaks.
Right.
But they were located geographically very far away, over 1,000 kilometers from Guangzhou and Wuhan. And while the viruses generally seem to spread slowly with their bat hosts?
Yeah, at typical bat dispersal speeds.
The specific lineages that jump to humans appear to have covered that huge distance incredibly quickly. What does that combination of findings really tell us about how spillover most likely happened?
Well, when you put all those pieces together, it paints a pretty compelling picture. The recent ancestry tells us the potential was there, the right kind of virus was circulating not long before. But the massive geographic distance, combined with the evidence that natural bat movement is much slower, strongly argues against the idea that the virus just naturally migrated the whole way through contiguous bat populations to reach Guangzhou or Wuhan.
It just wouldn't have had enough time based on those speeds.
Exactly. Decades, maybe centuries for natural spread over that distance, not 1 year or 5 years.
So if the bats didn't fly it there, how did it make that final rapid leap?
This points very strongly towards human activity playing a critical role, specifically the wildlife trade. Transporting infected animals, either the bats themselves, or more likely intermediate host mammals that got infected from bats over long distances, provides a mechanism that is orders of magnitude faster than natural bat dispersal.
Right, you can drive a truck 1,000 kilometers in a day or two.
Precisely. And the paper points out the historical link, right? With SARS-CoV-1, we know the wildlife trade involving animals like civets and raccoon dogs brought from source regions to markets like Guangzhou was implicated.
So they're arguing the same logic applies to SARS-CoV-2 reaching Wuhan, that the rapid movement they detected is basically the signature of infected animals being transported.
That's the strong implication, yes.
Yeah.
That the jump from the likely source region in Yunnan or northern Laos to Wuhan was facilitated by human transport of infected intermediate mammals caught in the wild and moved through those trade networks.
Does the study tell us anything else? Maybe about just how these viruses live and spread within bat populations normally?
It does offer some insights there too. The fact that the general viral diffusion rate matches bat movement suggests pretty efficient transmission within those bat populations. Maybe when bats move between caves or gather in large numbers for hibernation, the virus spreads easily.
And the recombination?
The high levels of recombination they had to account for also tells us something important. Different strains of these sarbecoviruses must be frequently co-infecting the same individual bats. That's the only way they can swap genetic material so readily.
So lots of mixing going on in those bat colonies. And, you know, the fact that extensive searching around Wuhan and Guangzhou hasn't turned up any super closely related bat viruses, does that fit this transport idea?
It does tend to reinforce it, yes. If the ancestor had been circulating locally near those cities for a long time via natural spread, you might have expected to find closer relatives in local bats despite sampling challenges. The absence of those, combined with the evidence for recent ancestry far away, strengthens the case for rapid long-distance transport being the final step.
Okay, so pulling back for the big picture view, what are the main conclusions we should take away from this Picard et al. Study, and where does it leave us in terms of thinking about the future?
I think the core conclusions are pretty clear and quite impactful. One, the direct bat ancestors of both SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2 were circulating surprisingly recently, likely just 1 to 6 years before they emerged in humans.
Okay, recent timing.
Two, these recent ancestors were most likely located in specific regions, Western China for SARS-1, Yunnan Northern Laos for SARS-2, which are geographically distant over 1,000 kilometers from the human emergence sites.
Distant location.
Three, while the virus is generally spread slowly through bat populations, tracking bat movement.
Slow natural spread.
The specific lineages that jump to humans show evidence of unusually rapid movement over that final large distance. This strongly implicates human-mediated transport, most likely via the wildlife trade involving infected intermediate animals, as a critical step in the emergence process.
Human-mediated transport as the key final step. What does this mean for trying to prevent future pandemics, then?
Well, it gives us some concrete directions. It clearly highlights those specific geographic areas, Western China, Northern Laos, as high-priority zones for future surveillance. We need to look closely at the Sarbico viruses circulating in bats and potential intermediate hosts in those regions.
Focus the search.
Exactly. It also really underscores the need for much better monitoring and regulation of the wildlife trade, that interface where these viruses can jump from animals into human networks and be transported rapidly across vast distances.
And scientifically.
Scientifically, it's a powerful demonstration of why we need whole genome sequencing. Partial sequences just don't cut it when dealing with recombination. You need the full picture to trace these complex histories accurately. And of course, it pushes for continued development of even better analytical methods for recombination, molecular clocks, and phylogeography, especially for wildlife systems.
Now, no study is perfect. Did the authors acknowledge limitations?
Oh yes, absolutely. Good science always does. They note that the dating relies on calibrating the clock using rates from humans-event infections, and the rate in bats could be different, which would shift the date slightly.
Okay.
Their method for finding those non-recombinant regions probably gives a conservative estimate. There might be even more recombination happening than they could detect. Phylogeographic models are always simplifications of messy reality.
Sure. Nature's complex.
And while they did sensitivity tests, the specific locations they inferred could still be influenced by where viruses have been found so far. Sampling is never perfectly complete, especially in remote areas like northern Vietnam, which might be important. Plus, bat behavior varies, hibernation, shedding patterns, meaning sampling catches viruses at specific times, not continuously.
So caveats to keep in mind, but overall.
Overall, despite those inherent challenges, this study provides a really robust, state-of-the-art recombination-aware analysis. It significantly moves the needle on our understanding of the recent evolutionary and geographic origins of these critical pandemic viruses. And its findings provide strong scientific weight to the hypothesis that rapid, human-driven transport of infected animals over long distances was a crucial factor in enabling both SARS and COVID-19 to emerge.
It really paints this picture of two vastly different speeds, doesn't it? You've got this slow, natural creep of viruses moving with bats across the landscape over years or decades, and then potentially this incredibly fast jump facilitated by human activity covering huge distances almost overnight. Thinking about that contrast really leaves you with a question, doesn't it? How does understanding this interplay between slow natural spread and potentially rapid artificial transport change how we should approach preventing the next spillover? Is focusing just on local wildlife and human interfaces enough, or do we need much broader strategies, maybe even global ones, that specifically target and manage those long-distance trade networks that can connect a remote bat cave to a major city in a matter of days?
That's the critical question, isn't it? Understanding these pathways, these different scales and speeds, is absolutely fundamental if we want to develop effective strategies to actually reduce the risk of future pandemics. Research like this gives us the essential insights to start figuring that out.
Well, that was a really thorough look at a complex and important piece of research. It certainly shows the power of using genetics and geography together to unravel these emergence pathways.
Absolutely. Getting a handle on these pathways is key to mitigation.
This analysis was based on an open access article published under a CC BY 4.0 license.
And as always, you can find the DOI and the license link for the original paper by Jonathan E. Picar and colleagues right there in the description for this analysis.
Thank you so much for joining us for this exploration into the recent origins and movements of the bat viruses that led to SARS and COVID-19. Until next time, keep asking questions and keep exploring the frontiers of science.